So it's like we don't even realize sometimes that so much of our actions, our desires, our decisions, our choices are still based from this root unworthiness instead of, you know, like recognizing, oh, but what do we really want? And what is our real desire? And if we take away all of that and we stop trying to fix ourselves, what's left for us?
I'm Sonia Statman, and you're listening to The Feminine Lens. Over the last 20 years, I've had the honor to work with thousands of women around the globe in self-development, in leadership, and in business. Being in the trenches with women has taught me that we have to stop seeing ourselves and the world through the patriarchal lens. I've spent my life helping women look through a new lens, a feminine lens, a lens that honors our innate worth and wisdom, a lens that empowers us with more wealth and freedom. The Feminine Lens is designed to challenge you. It will change what you think and what you know, but it will help you reclaim yourself. And that is the way we change the world. Ready? Let's do this.
Hi, and welcome back to The Feminine Lens. I am so excited this week because I have an amazing panel of guests, and we're continuing our conversation around wealth, women, and worthiness, which I think is such a powerful and important topic, and we need a lot more conversations around it. So I'm going to have each member of this amazing panel introduce themselves, and I'm going to start with Iffy.
Hi, thank you so much, Sonia, for having me on your podcast. I'm super excited to talk about this subject because it is my jam. I am Ifeoma Ibekwe. You can call me Iffy. I'm an estate planning attorney who has a practice in Austin, Texas, but serves the entire state of Texas. And what I do is I intentionally reach out to women and activate them so they can get their wills and their trusts and other estate planning documents in place. I really believe that women must demand agency over decisions that affect them and their bodies. And I use my legal training to help them do that. And I got a lot of pushback. Oh, you can't advertise just to women. What about the men? What? Listen, not my concern. I feel like a lot of women are the nexus to, you know, partners and spouses and other women and children and parents. And so it has worked wonders. And I intentionally hold myself out as someone who markets specifically to women.
I love that. And I am so glad you're here.
Thank you.
And our next panelist, Jess, will you introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for this. I'm super excited for this conversation. My name is Jess Joswick. I'm a business coach and the founder of Backbone Business, and I help online entrepreneurs build calm, scalable, and profitable businesses. So when people start working with me, they're really just overworked, they're overwhelmed, and they're not sure what they need to do to get to the next level. And they're really thinking about, they're looking at, do I need to go back to my 9-to-5? Do I need to just give up this business? And, you know, this is what we're talking about today. I've just seen it so much over and over with my clients that, you know, the strategies that they're learning are not, they're not putting them into place. The tools that they've purchased, they're not using them. And they're wondering what that missing piece is. And we have to get into how they've learned about money and what they've made it mean, what they've made their careers mean, what they've made their accomplishments mean in any arena. It's something that we desperately need to unpack, particularly for people who identify as female.
Yes, I love that. 100% agree. Thank you, Jess. Megan, would you introduce yourself?
I'm Megan Cornille, and I'm a feminist consultant and coach. And I work with industry leaders to heal from patriarchal capitalism and create more disruptive, inclusive, and adaptive businesses and cultures in their organizations. And this particular topic is really, really, really important to me because, I mean, just healing from patriarchal culture and the narrative around it is deeply ingrained around the subject matter of wealth, women, and worthiness, and how we've internalized those stories about tying our worth to money and different types of roles and conditioning that have been put on us. So I'm really excited about today's conversation.
Beautiful. Thank you, Megan. So this is going to be an awesome panel, and we're just going to dive in. And I thought I would maybe open the conversation up to talk about, you know, why do women struggle with wealth? Right? Because I think there's facts that women struggle with wealth. There's plenty of statistics we could pull up. There's plenty of things we could talk about. But why? Why is that such a struggle for women in particular, or those who identify as women? I think, you know, with all the patriarchal influences, with all the things we're taught as we're young, you know, there's a lot of influences that make it a struggle for us to create money, to align with money, to love money, to not fear money. What do you all think is some of the reasons that we struggle with money?
I think that you hit the nail on the head, you know. It's how we are raised. It's how it's the air we breathe. It's the lack of access, right? It's the shamefulness of talking about money, yes, desiring money, and building wealth. You know, it's so taboo, especially for women. And I think when you think of traditional roles, you think about, well, that's a man's decision, and that's something you should discuss with your husband before going forward, right? When you think about that traditional, whatever traditional is anyway, Leave It to Beaver comes to mind, you know, that's not our domain. And I think that that has hurt us so much, especially, you know, now looking at how far women have to go in order to just be considered an equal with their male counterpart, you know. And when you drill it down to Black women, Indigenous women, Brown women, that disparity in everything, I mean, not just wealth, but access, education, everything, and the outcomes related to that are just so, so poor. And I think that one of the things that really limits women is not being able to speak freely about money. How much are you being paid, right? How much are you making? Just even that sharing of information can empower the next person. But again, it's like, no, we don't talk about money. That's none of our business. And all the while we are suffering, because that's just, you know, a way to know your worth is to know the numbers. And so I see that a lot in my practice as well. You know, people not wanting to make estate planning decisions apart from their spouse, right? Or they haven't done it this far because he wasn't ready, you know? And that's another way that women are underpaid, underrepresented, and unable to access wealth the way that they should.
Yeah, I love that, Ify. I think for me, it's what's not said more than what was said. You know, when I look back on my own experiences and experiences of, you know, just people I knew growing up and, you know, even well into my 20s, that money is just sort of this thing that exists, and we don't talk about how you make it, or, you know, how you can ask for more, or if you should, or, you know, if you're going to, what to say, or when that goes down. And so as I was building my career, money was never a focus. It was not supposed to, air quotes, be about that. And so it's really, I see that, you know, replicated for people who step out of the 9-to-5 space, especially who start their own businesses. You know, they bring whatever happened in the past, we're bringing it into whatever we're doing in the future.
100%.
Yeah, I agree so much with both of you. And I think a lot of it is around the fact that we as women have not shaped, we didn't create the table that we're sitting at. So we're trying to create space. And even once we sort of awaken to the sense of the type of agency that we have and the potential, we still are sitting at a table that's dictated by certain terms, and that being patriarchal capitalist terms that don't resonate with the seasons of our life, the way that we want to embody. Like, just looking at it from the feminine lens, is that it doesn't cyclically move with us. So I often say, like, we're pretty relational beings, and patriarchal capitalism is very transactional. And so I see, like, even in women in business spaces, I see the perpetuating of patriarchal norms, which is why also, like, glass ceiling feminism is such bullshit, because it basically says, and I hope it's okay to say that, is that it, you know, it says, like, once you reach a certain point, you just have to climb and break it and then you'll make it. And there's all of these different, I mean, that's the thing. Patriarchy is insidious in the way it comes through the system. So it shows up in all these ways, and we as women internalize it. So when something doesn't work for us, and we're not accumulating wealth potentially at the same rate as, you know, our male counterparts, we internalize that instead of looking at the system itself and saying, how can we do this in a different way? Because we're just oftentimes trying to work within the system that it exists.
Yeah, I love that, Megan. That's a, you know, it really makes me think of when you said cyclical and seasons, how I guess capitalism, patriarchy, like, everything is coming together. And, you know, the easiest explanation, we're always looking for the easiest explanation. And the easiest explanation is linear. It's a straight line. So either you're successful or you're not, or you're ascending or you're descending. And anything in between, you know, that doesn't really leave room for the gray area that definitely exists in life, called I'm at a plateau and here are the reasons. And it has nothing to do with how good I am at the thing that I'm doing. Or I am in a season, I am in the winter of my business right now, and other things need to happen besides explosive growth. So Sonia, I know that this is a really big part of your work. I've just started to think about that for myself, and I'm wondering if anyone else can relate to that feeling of, okay, it's winter, or it's spring, I'm really busy planting, you know, we're not ready to harvest yet. It's not harvest season.
Yes. You know, that cyclical piece is actually so incredibly important to women. And, you know, even if you look at, like, the feminine and masculine, or the yin and the yang concept, you know, there's this idea of, like, death and decay is part of that feminine, or it's part of that rooting back into the ground, going back into the darkness to grow once again. And I think we don't even think about making money in terms of cyclical. And I mean, there's, like, so many ways we could piece that apart too, right? Because also women go through cyclical cycles in their bodies. They go through cycles with having children, you know, and all of those cycles mean that we have times of, we can fully create wealth, and times that we struggle to create wealth, or that we struggle to be out in the world creating wealth. And so there's things, systems we can put in place, and there's things that we can do to create that for ourselves. But I think so much one of the problems in what Megan was talking about as well is that, yeah, the table wasn't created by us. And so all the systems are set for constant production. And I know, like, I cannot do constant production. I'm a very cyclical person. I need lots of downtime. I need lots of space. I need lots of, and what I've always has happened in my life is during those times when I want to go inward or I don't want to be outward, you know, I've gotten shamed a lot by the patriarchy. In terms of, like, why aren't you out there hustling? Right. Why aren't you just focused on making money? But I think for women, we have to design something very different in terms of creating wealth.
I love the analogy. Any plant analogy, as a plant lady over here, just it's like unlocking so many thoughts in my head. You all are absolutely right. I think the whole idea of glass ceilings, hustle culture, bro culture, all that patriarchal stuff that we were told, well, you can't have access to it unless you are like a man, right? Yes. I love that whole concept, Megan, of the table is not built for us. That's why it doesn't work, you know? And I just think it's set up for failure, which is why we feel like we're failing, mm-hmm. right? When you yeah. are in that system, and we are all in this system. So removing yourself from it is a life work in and of itself. I also do think that, you know, even in that traditional patriarchal model, that rest is revolution. You know, we were seeing a lot of men right now talking about how they have enjoyed this season. Granted, some of them are enjoying it for the wrong reasons, but the idea of, I don't have to get up and hustle and present myself and do all of the things. It's actually having a feminine lens on the, and no pun intended, is it benefits the entire system, right? It does. Because it's not a good system if it ignores so many of us and our input and how we work and wants to force us into these old industrialized, you know, archaic ways of being and producing in the world. And I'm like you, I do need to retreat. You know, I take my Fridays off. Last week I live in Arkansas, in Bentonville, even though I practice law in Texas, and we have a world-class museum. And sometimes I just have to immerse myself in nature, put my hands in soil, put my feet in grass, or go look at visual art, or listen to music, or just be by water, or look at birds. It's just, it's the only way I feel like I'm charged up. And that's part of my business. And I feel that as women find other models, even though they might be completely disregarded as a valid option, we can create those little spaces where I have four women who work for me, and I want them to also immerse themselves in. I have a musician and they love their pets and they love art and they create and, you know, they read and all these other things that I feel are missing from having a truly well-rounded life. If all you're thinking of is producing, profit, capitalism, money, it doesn't satisfy. And I think that's the beauty of having the perspective of a woman or someone who identifies as a woman, because that isn't a comfortable model for us, for most of us, I should say. It's not comfortable because it was never meant for us. And that's really hard to sit with, you know. I love a seasonal model. I want a seasonal model. We need months off in the summer to be outside, and then we can go in the winter and not think about, you know, it makes so much sense, you know?
Yeah. Effie, you're speaking to my heart. Cause like, I don't know about, I mean, and your listeners too, Sonia, is like, how often do you feel, if you really step back and reflect, you feel that the feelings of anxiety and things like that are coming from our connectedness to technology, our connectedness to production, and all of that. I mean, even today, when you were saying, you know, putting your hands in the dirt, I live in Asheville. So I went out into the mountains and went on a hike and went to the waterfalls because I have to hear it. Like that needs to consume my senses because it cleanses my nervous system. Yes. From, you know, the modern world. And I think that nature church is something that everybody needs to hear, heal our culture, very much so, because as much as there's this perpetuation that, you know, innovation and healing and all of these things come from these modern technologies, they actually come from ancient technologies, which, you know, indigenous cultures knew. And we as, I'm not on video, so I'm a white woman. So, you know, even so where I am American white is that, you know, I'm so far removed from what my cultural narrative is. So we have an even more healing to do around, not more, but, you know, we have a different avenue of healing around cultural reclamation and what are those stories and what are those ancient technologies that we can claim without appropriating, and nature is central to that. And so I think that's also, you know, this year has taught me to reframe my work around healing, because I was always like a disruptor. That's what I would, you know, categorize myself as, and I still identify as that. But I think that, again, I'm not having this binary where we can actually be more holistic in our approach is really important. And I think when we're talking about women and wealth and worthiness, that wholeness piece is really where we start to reclaim the worthy, because all of us is worthy, not just the piece that generates something. Yes. That piece that you're talking about, Effie, that rests, that piece is just as worthy, that piece that's creative and has that winter season to just hibernate and, you know, ideate, that piece is worthy too. So I'll quiet down now.
I love the idea, Megan, of worthiness not being monetized. I think so many of the things we do, we are in such a culture where, oh, you're good at baking, you should open a bakery.
Right.
Instead of it being for the practice itself. You know, when I think of how you have specialists, I don't know if you've seen that movie, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And it's a documentary about the preparation of sushi. It's a world-class restaurant in Japan. There's a man, Jiro, and he is a master sushi chef, right? I think he's won Michelin stars. Not that, you know, I have my thoughts on that. But part of it is that there are certain things that people do almost as a, and I think there's a Japanese word for it, which is escaping me now, but it's just the repetitive action of doing something that you engage more than just, oh yeah, I got to get this rice right? I got to get this seaweed ready. It's just so much more of a meditative practice. And there are certain things that I think when you talk about nature as a recharging or something as a practice of recharging, that's what came to mind, is like, you can do the same sort of thing. It could be that you could get out and hike, you could put your feet in water, and it's almost like it soothes your soul. You know, it's just one of those things that you do and brings replenishing and renewal. But you don't have to start a hiking company. Right. You don't have to put a boat on and like hire people to get in so that you can all put your feet in the water and you get paid for it. And I feel like American culture, Western culture is that innately there are things that people do because they enjoy, but then there's this, it's like an outward push, or I don't know where it comes from. It's just in the air to monetize it. Right. And certain things are just wonderful because you like to paint or fold paper or perfect making a French macaron, whatever it is, without thinking, and I'm going to make this a $3 million business in the next 4 years, you know? So that's just what came to mind. It's just like, oh, I love that. Just nature as a way. I think we should all reclaim nature. And that's one benefit. It is a privilege to be around nature, first of all, because there aren't many public spaces everywhere. But as part of healing, which many, many cultures continue and traditionally, historically have used as a source, you know, so much of that is lost in our culture. We're just in our phones and just angst and anxiety ridden as people. And a lot of us are medicated because of it. And there are uses for medication, but I totally agree that nature is, it's a soul medicine.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I want to kind of steer the conversation to around what happens when we really recognize our worthiness, and not like we're worthy if we do ABC or we're worthy because we are ABC, but like our innate worthiness, like we're worthy by breathing. You know, what happens and how does that change our experience of money and wealth and creating it when we really step into that worthiness?
I have so many thoughts on this. I'm an external processor. I won't take long on this one. It, just like I said, rest is revolution. If women identified themselves as worthy, it would just be too much. I think that we wouldn't spend time thinking about how our skin's not right and how our waist is no longer as snatched as it needs to be, and how, you know, your hair's not laying right, even though you had it blow dried and you curled it this certain way. If we were just worthy, period, my goodness, what would we do with our time?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It's how I want to raise. I have 4 kids. I have 3 daughters. I want them to know that whether your hair is in place or whether you're carrying weight or not is completely detached from your worthiness. I wasn't raised like that, but what a lot of time I would have back if I wasn't? How much more would I have been able to experience without feeling shame for just being? It's the opposite of how the world views women and how we, many of us, are raised and how we interact with the world. It would just be revolution, complete revolution.
Yeah, it would be, you know, we would have focus, exactly. Like, we would stop playing the, when I get to this level, then I can treat myself game, or the, you know, when I don't know, like, when I get this to this revenue goal, then I can hire somebody, or then I can take a vacation. We would just say, I'm just going to take the vacation now. I'm going to, you know, spend that time away, and then I'm going to come back and actually do the thing. And I'm not going to take 3 hours and think about my outfit or whatever it is. And not that that's bad inherently to think about things that give you enjoyment, like fashion, for example, or anything like that. It's not to say that all of those things are super superfluous, but we do exactly how you were saying, like, we get caught up in these things that aren't impacting our joy, you know, our connections, relationships with other people, not affecting our bank account, any of these things that actually propel us forward. So yeah, we would get more done and we would have more fun.
I agree. So, like, I think that for me, the way that resonates is that when I acknowledge my worthiness, it simplifies my life because I'm focusing on the things that matter to me, not the things that I'm told should matter to me.
Yes.
And it's literally a daily practice for me. And I most often don't get it right. I like to be brutally honest, because it's something that, it's almost like when you're aware of the level of conditioning that our society has gone through, and that what you as yourself, when you start that healing process, you can't unsee it, but it's a daily struggle to be able to use your tools to try to change that story. And I think that, you know, the worthiness piece is, it simplifies things, because then we're looking at what matters. And so, you know, for instance, in the work I do, it's often like, it's not what we're doing for our work, but it's how we're doing it. So that's what we say in our consulting practice a lot, that it's not, we can do a lot of things, but how we do it is the difference, because it's based around what our principles are, not the thing, not the transaction. And so I think that shifts the energy a little bit. And when around the worthiness piece is, then we can start living our life and embodying our life how we want to live it, not about the benchmarks of what we've done or what we've produced, like we've been talking about so much.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, because I think until we start really going down that commitment and that pathway to doing some of the worthy work, to working on ourselves in that way, we don't realize how insidious it is, right? You know, like, I know so many people who, it's like almost this tricky mind, like as they're working on themselves, or as they're trying to be, or as they're trying to do something with their business, or as they're trying to like become who they want to be, even that is like sort of undercurrent of fixing themselves, or, mm-hmm. you know, like being worthy. So it's like, we don't even realize sometimes that so much of our actions, our desires, our decisions, our choices are still based from this root unworthiness, instead of, you know, like recognizing, oh, but what do we really want? And what is our real desire? And if we take away all of that and we stop trying to fix ourselves, what's left for us? Right? Like, what would we create if we weren't trying to fix ourselves?
It's such a fine line between, you know, I'm fixing something that actually, there's a problem here and I'm fixing it, or I'm addressing it, I'm healing, or into, I'm trying to change myself and mold myself into somebody who is more palatable in some way. And I totally agree. You know, I also see it in the business space with people who are starting businesses or have had one for a bit, and they just keep learning new stuff and, you know, kind of chasing a new certification or a new like thing that they're going to add to the business. And, you know, that's all well and good. Like, let's all keep learning stuff, you know, let's never stop learning. But again, the fine line between I'm learning something because I'm actually interested in it and it gives me joy and it helps me do something better versus I'm doing this because I don't feel worthy enough to work with people. So when I get this new certification, then I can charge more, or then I can do something brave or whatever. Then I can start this podcast or whatever that this goal is that we've been putting off. And it's just, it's like you're just chasing something. You're never going to get there. You're never going to get to the point where you're feeling worthy enough to do the thing.
I think when you talk about changing to be more palatable, I was like, to be more palatable to whom? Because it's just like that carrot and the horse analogy, where, like you said, there is no end to it. Right. And so
right.
Worthy work, which I will do till the day I die.
Me too.
Is just that renewing of your mind, right? Renewing and just centering yourself and really examining why it is that you're doing things in business or in your relationship or to your body or to your health in order to fit some mold that nobody's going to approve of. You
right.
know?
Right.
I think about how many years I spent thinking I was fat.
Yeah.
And I look back at pictures of me in high school and I was not fat at all.
Right.
But a lot of it came from, like, you know, my childhood being told that I was fat. You know, I grew up in Nigeria. They have all these sing songs and, you know, their concept of a fat child is not a fat child, right? Because I see my daughter now and I'm like, oh, they'd call her fat and she's not fat at all. But that stuck with me, so that even when I was, you know, in a shape that was more societally accept, I wasn't feeling great about it. I was still resonating with that. Ugh, look how fat you are, you know, and that fat phobia that was implanted probably as a 3 or 4 year old is something that I have to undo, because if I chase that, I will never be satisfied until I completely ruin my entire self, you know, and become a disordered eater and have body dysmorphia and all the things just for that. I mean, so I have to catch myself. I'm turning 40 this year. I'm done with that. I'm not going to spend my time chasing certain things because to your point, there's no end to it and there's no joy to it, whether it's your body or I know 17 different things and I'm ready to service you now and I'll give you a 40% discount. You know,
right?
Yes. Because I'm not really worthy of that full price. And that's something I struggle with, where I'm like, I can't ask them for that much money because it's so much money. And why should they give it to me? Why would I be worthy of that? It's just, I think about it and I still go back to just how it never satisfies, you know, that pursuit of the norm or whatever it is that we've painted or that society has shaped in our minds. It never satisfies and you'll never get it. It's like that carrot. It'll keep being dangled and you keep
100%
running yeah. after it.
Yeah. I think that the unlearning that you're talking about is lifelong work because it's so deep. I mean, it goes so deep. Each time we extract a layer of it, there's, you know, so many layers underneath. But one thing I wanted to say was that, you know, it's important that we keep having, so in the work that I've done with women is that, you know, there's a lot of different things I would say that I like to create. So there's a lot of different things that we've done. But one thing that I've found that's a very important thread throughout all of it that we need more of is the dialogue and the conversations and the willingness to step out and talk about these things, because where there's so many women out there who are having these internal monologues and continue to internalize these things. And society, of course, keeps reinforcing them through social media, through, because even the health and wellness that's saying, you know, heal yourself and all of this stuff, there's the other side of it that comes right around and kicks them and they fall back down. So it becomes this vicious cycle. So it's important, the transparency and the support that we can offer each other, that community over competition, because we're also told women in business, you know, we should support each other. And yet there's still very competitive scarcity that runs through conversations around women, wealth, and worthiness is scarcity. It causes so many of us to engage in these harmful behaviors and towards ourselves and just in life in general. Yeah. And in our businesses and things like that.
When I think it's so, you know, one of the things I've talked about for decades is how, you know, the business world has been structured completely from the masculine lens. Like, it's all about hierarchy. It's all about, you know, production. It's all about, you know, competition. And so even though we've tried to sort of shift our mindset around it, if we're still in those same frameworks, you know, we often get caught in the default, or we get caught in the way that everyone else is operating. And I mean, that's why, you know, I think women in business have to totally step out of all those frameworks to be able to really recognize the collaboration that we can have, the worthiness that each of us has, the way that we can, you know, honor and support the people that we work with, the way that we can work together in so many ways. Like, there's all these ways in which we can really switch that paradigm. But, you know, so much of it is because the default is the masculine. The default is that patriarchal influence. And we've kind of gotten swept up and stuck in it.
Yeah. And it's easy to not be optimistic about that, to just be like, well, it's always going to be this way, or, you know, we can't create a new system. And so I'm just not going to try. So to take that as, you know, the sentence, the life sentence called, you know, there's always going to be a glass ceiling, so to speak, or a no-go zone where, you know, we're just, success on our terms is not possible. And I reject that. I can't believe that, you know, I can't do the work that I do or just exist as a human and believe that it's not possible to make a new way. I don't have it, you know, I don't know exactly what that looks like. Like, I don't have a clear picture. I'm not going to do it alone. That's not possible. So, but it has to happen. Like, it, you know, more than ever, now more than ever, we need to find a way to do it. It's not just a nice to have. We have to, you know, just to put a really fine point on it, if we're going to keep going, you know, as the human race, we have to find a new way to do business and to create community.
I think that we're seeing alternative models, right? They're not mainstream. And I'm like you, I'm not going to just lay down and say, yep, oh, well, that's it. Because if our predecessors had done that, we wouldn't be where we are right now, having a Zoom call talking about, you know, a feminist lens on anything, right? Yeah. That we should be at home bearing children and cooking supper for our husbands. And so when I think of someone like Kamala Harris, you know, even though that's still a very patriarchal, male-dominated, white supremacist, you know, system, and then I see someone like her get in there, or Barack Obama, it just unlocks something in me, because that was never supposed to happen. I used to say before, I'll even take it back to Barack Obama, he's not even a woman, but, you know, access in this country, I was like, oh, I'm never going to see it in my lifetime. Like, I said that. I was born in 1981 and I truly meant it. And then the woman one, I also felt that way too. Like, oh, this country hates women. It's not going to happen, right? And while I don't disagree with that, it did happen. I think the country hates women, don't get me wrong, but it did happen. And I showed my daughters and my son Kamala Harris. And I said, this is Kamala Harris. She is the vice president of the United States. And I know that in the past, I have not talked anything about the presidency to my children.
Yeah.
Certainly not anything to share in their lifetimes. They have been under quite an oppressive regime, right? It's nothing that I thought was worth. But their first is her, because I could control that. We're in a pandemic. I have access to what they have access to. And to them, it is now normal. It is normal. That is not a thing that one day they will aspire to. It has happened and they have seen it. And my 3-year-old and 5-year-old daughter think it is normal because they have known no different. And that's the sort of thing that advances the ball. Because while that is a system that is very broken and doesn't work for us, it opens the eyes to possibilities. And there might be systems that we cannot even fathom that somebody out there can, or the next generation has or will, right? And that's the hope. That's the hope that I have to hold on to, and that we're not going through this in a vacuum. We are a collective. People who are of this mind are collective minded. It's not individualistic. We see what that results in when you're so wrapped up in your individual freedom, right? We recently, as of this recording, had the Capitol riots, and we saw what that spirit does. Right? It destroys. It's not about the common man. It's not about inclusivity and equity and diversity. It is about self and selfishness and mine and my foot on your neck to get mine, right? Yes. And so that's a broken system. That's why it's ugly and it stinks and we're not attracted to it. And so I'm not the ideate. I love ideating, but I don't have the idea yet. But I know that even within my own business, I'm doing it a little bit different, right? I'm paying you well. And I care about you as a whole person. I told my employees, bring your whole self to the office, right? If your pet died, we don't have to pretend like your pet didn't die, okay? If you're feeling down because something happened in your life, I want to create space for that. That's the model. I don't know how to replicate that model, but in my, you know, I'm not trying to monetize it, but in my little sphere, that's the model. It's like, I want you to bring your whole self.
Yeah. I mean, it's the ripple effect. I mean, that's what I see in terms of like the clients that I work with as they start to understand what sort of the feminine side is, as they start to look at their businesses through a feminine lens, as they start to create space for themselves, as they start to have self-care, as they start to move through cycles, as they create that, not only do they have the palpable experience of what that feels like, they share it with the people in their lives. They work with their clients in that way, right? And I've seen such a dramatic shift, especially over the last year, of people who are stepping into this different way of being and seeing and running businesses, and then how many people they affect, right? Even just like their family members who are like, wow, this is a totally cool way to be, or their partners who are like, yeah, I'm loving this life that you're creating, or their kids who are like, mommy's around, or, you know, like right. All these amazing ways. And I think that is the piece. It's like, we have to be it. We have to step into it. We have to do the work, obviously, to break ourselves from the system. But then it's the ripple effect.
I love it.
Totally.
That feels expansive and that feels hopeful. And I think we have to cling on to the things that make us feel like we can expand and stretch out rather than constrict and hide, you know? Yeah. And I love that about the ripple effect. That was, yes, I'm taking that too.
It also feels less like there's less pressure. Like, I don't have to figure this out on my own. I don't have to figure it out now. I can do my thing. I can be the person that I am. And, you know, this is my area. And I'm going to keep chugging along here. But I'm going to bring other people into it and just trust that what I'm doing is reaching even more people.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. And we're each playing a role, right? We are each affecting the next ripple, right?
Yeah,
it's 100%. Not that we started it, because we didn't. It started. We don't recognize it as a ripple when you're all the way out in the lake or in the ocean, but it eventually became like a wave. And that's what makes this exciting, is now we are talking about things like wealth.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking about things like worthiness and how we are doing the work personally, even though I think on our, you know, if someone were to look at, you know, this group of women and say, oh, they're very successful. And, you know, I remember having conversations where we just bond on self-doubt. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, man, we are really accomplished, but oh my gosh, I don't know what suit to wear to this interview. And I don't think this person likes me. And I don't have those conversations anymore. And maybe it's my circle.
Yeah.
But now there's real conversation. Yes, we can talk about our insecurities, but I feel like women are entering a phase, not all, unfortunately, where we are really starting to call things out in ways that I feel like we were dormant for a couple of decades. I don't know if that's a fact or just my experience, but I think we thought things had gotten really good and we have to see that they hadn't.
Right.
You know, one thing involved an orange person in the White House to wake up people. People had to be shot and killed. They didn't have to be, but it took that, to open our eyes and to be activated and not be complacent and to see that, I am wasting a lot of time on that. And this is all happening. And what's my role? And so I have to hold on to hope that this means something, just like, you know, all the events in your life have led up to this moment. So I just have to believe that this means something.
Yeah, I love that. All right, well, we're going to wrap up soon. But before we do that, is there anything that you all would like to share with the listeners? Anything about worthiness or wealth, expansion? We've talked about so many great kind of threads today. You know, any strategy or tip that they can maybe take away from today?
I think one thing that I really just want to highlight is that as we do this work, we really need to also do the boundary work. We need to do the work to understand our own boundaries so that we're building our wealth and our worthiness in our own vision and not letting the noise. So like even the things we talked about is like reconnect, what are the healing things that reconnect us away from the noise or the other stories or the conditioning. We need to build those boundaries.
Yeah. I love that.
I think that I would add that you are worthy, period. As a floor.
Yeah.
And then that's literally, if you can do that kind of work where you remind yourself of that daily, hourly, whatever it is, do the worthy work and let yourself know that you are worthy, period. And then the other thing I would say, you know, in my line of work, I see women lose so much agency when it comes to their health and their wealth. And I guess this would be my other plug, is that if you are 18 and you have the capacity to make decisions, get your health directives in order. Pick people to help you make decisions for your body if you can't make them, and then find a way to pass on your wealth, whether it's your stuff or your assets, to the next generation. And I think women are missing out on a lot of that. And wealth is built generationally. It builds generationally. And if we are not part of that intergenerational wealth transfer, or if we are at the mercy of other people to make our health decisions for our body, to me, that screams that there's like a lack of worthiness there. There's worthy work to be done, not a lack of worthiness, but there's worthy work to be done to see that that is something that you are absolutely worthy of.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. For in my line of work, I see a lot, again, I go back to strategies aren't going to save you. Learn and do the work so that you can save yourself. You know, whatever it is you're doing, whatever it is you're building. And saving yourself to me means not that you're going to do everything on your own. You're going to be the martyr. You're going to find people to lean on. But, you know, there's no one you can hire who's going to make you wake up and feel like, you know what, I can do the things that are going to make me feel good today, and that's okay. I am inherently motivated to do these things because I think that they're important. And I have, just what Megan was saying, boundaries around the messages that aren't getting me to the things that are important to me, whatever they may be, you know, cultivating relationships, creating, reaching goals in your career or your business. But you can't buy a strategy for that. It really is, you know, year over year doing the work, and it is often solitary.
Yes.
And you can get guides to help you with that, and you can, you know, get a team to help you and support you with things. But at the end of the day, you have to be you have to love yourself. You have to radically approve of yourself.
I think that really leads into trusting yourself, right? So much about building our future, building our wealth, and creating what we want in the world is about trusting ourselves. Whatever that feeling is, whatever that desire is, it's trusting it.
Yeah, and I think it was Adrienne Marie Brown who said, moving at the speed of trust. I use that with organizations a lot to get them to understand how culture shifts, but that's also how empowerment shifts. So we have to know that it's, even though we're taught in this culture that things happen quickly, we need to honor that that's not always the case.
I love that. Well, thank you all for being here. It was an absolute honor having you on the show. And thank you, listeners. I will be talking to you next week.
Thanks so much for listening to The Feminine Lens. If you're a woman in business and tired of trying to operate through the traditional patriarchal lens, check out my group program. You get the chance to apply these podcast topics to your life and business. You'll find coaching, support, and new perspectives on how to grow your business with more alignment and freedom. You'll be surrounded by amazing women and transform the way you feel about your value, your voice, and the gift you are bringing to the world. Just head over to SonjaStatman.com. All right, see you next week.